This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, tracking the city's economic incentive program. But first,
do you believe there is a demi-monde? A half-world between what we know and what we fear. A place in the shadows, rarely seen but deeply felt. Where some unfortunate souls are cursed to live always.
That sounds like a warning.
It's an invitation.
Happy Halloween. Are you going to watch a scary movie or TV show to celebrate the day? Or maybe you like a good scare any time of the year, whether it's Stephen King's It, The Walking Dead, Penny Dreadful, or Stranger Things, just to name a few. And audiences also love superheroes. Worldwide box office revenue for Marvel films, from the first Iron Man to this summer's Spider-Man Homecoming, tops $12 billion. The new Thor movie should add quite a bit to that total. And joining us to discuss the popularity of horror and heroes in the media are University of Cincinnati McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professors Dr. Rebecca Sutherland-Bora and Gary Vaughn. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Rebecca and Gary, thank you both for being here this afternoon.
Happy Halloween.
Yes.
It's great to haunt your studios.
Yes, spooktacular.
Well, and thank you. Thank you for coming prepared with good puns as well. So, Penny Dreadful, we heard that clip from that. Mm-hmm. I know Timothy Dalton's in it. That's about the extent mm-hmm. of my knowledge of Penny Dreadful. But what's that about?
Well, first of all, it's not on the air anymore. It was canceled after three seasons, I think, partly
boo.
Because... Yeah, boo. Partly because...
A big boo or...
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. Partly because the actors were kind of expensive. Timothy Dalton, Josh Hartnett, Eva Green, who does some marvelous performances in there. And partly because they had the most lavish sets, really beautiful sets, very expensive. It's basically the story of Eva Green's character who is undergoing a constant struggle against evil, feeling like she's falling away from the good in the universe and being stalked by Satan. And she makes various alliances with other demi-monde in-between creatures like Josh Hartnett, who plays a werewolf. And she battles covens of witches and clans of vampires and so forth. It's all done very stylishly. And I would emphasize that I think it's very feminist. There's a lot of girl power in that series. And I think it's out on DVD now, so if anybody wants to get it and watch it, and you could also watch it on probably Netflix, too.
All that packed into one show.
Yes. It's they went through sort of all types of monsters on there, and including female uprising, which was pretty
yes.
darn good.
And it brings in characters from fiction. So we have Victor Frankenstein and his monster, who's actually parts terrifying and part a sympathetic figure in the series. And there's even Dorian Gray on there, who again, like a lot of these other characters, inhabits this in-between realm.
The liminal,
yes.
They call it the demi-monde.
Yes, yes. So it's just marvelously done. There's even a bride, an intended bride of Frankenstein, that Dr. Frankenstein, played by Harry Treadaway, by the way, who was just in Mr. Mercedes. The Bride of Frankenstein is created for the Frankenstein monster, but turns out she doesn't especially like him, and she falls for Dorian Gray, and she was in real life, quote-unquote, a prostitute, and so in her afterlife, she decides to try to put together an army of prostitutes and take over Dorian Gray's world, and that's another fascinating thing about it, I believe.
So you got Frankenstein, you've got werewolves, you've got all these things in there. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of these stories have been around for so long. and they've received so many different treatments in books and film and TV, yet we still find them to be so interesting. What gives horror such longevity?
Well, with vampires, it's something that it appears in every culture. Usually by the time it makes out of folklore from being kind of icky and yucky like The Walking Dead, it becomes more sexualized. So generally by the time you hit Dracula and The Vampire by Jean Polidori, which was before that, you've gone from the icky and gross to more of the sensual and sexual and, you know, all the way up through Anne Rice and then Twilight.
Back in, I think it was 1990, the scholar Noel Carroll came out with the book, The Philosophy of Horror, Paradoxes of the Heart, which looks at what he called the idea of being art horrified, that we're both repelled and fascinated, attracted by horrible things that aren't real. And the safety comes in knowing that they're not real, but we can experience a vicarious thrill by watching horror. And if you think about it for a second, the word monsters itself comes from the Latin monstrum, which means to demonstrate, to show, to provide an omen. So throughout history, monsters have been seen as these characters that inhabit this in-between place, like the undead, and they can reflect our inner anxieties. And I would say that the Great Recession back in 2007-8 spurred a lot of economic fears, and that's when zombies yep. came back to life in artistic senses. And I would argue that today we have a lot of – our culture has a lot of social anxiety, fears about the changing, evolving definition of family, of marriage. And those kinds of fears can be threatening to people. And
so this is a form of escapism as well?
A form of escapism, and it's also objectifying our fears. Fear of the Walking Dead, for instance, concerns a non-traditional, very dysfunctional blended family. Penny Dreadful, we have these various families. Some are horrific, and some are trying to help the main character. So this kind of makeshift idea of family. All these things, I think, are emphasizing, projecting our own fears.
You mentioned, Gary, how zombies became popular mm-hmm. around the start of the Great Recession yeah. in 2008. And so is there a cyclical nature that you can trace to horror movies, that their popularity rises during certain periods of time and levels off at other periods of time?
Yes. They become revitalized during periods of economic or social anxiety and stress. Even something like Halloween, which is a celebration, goes back to Celtic times with the Samhain celebrations, trying to appease spirits and ghosts to stave off, you know, fears about winter. Halloween comes at a transitional time. Almost quite literally now, next Sunday, if we move to a different, we go off a daylight savings time.
Just look at how the weather's changed so much going into
yeah.
Halloween. Yeah, it's
so in ancient times, people had fears about their crops are dying. What's going to happen? They didn't have science to tell them that the spring would come. In the mid-19th century or so in America, Halloween became more of a family sort of gathering, and like party and exchanging of gifts and so forth. And so the fear element was kind of subdued there. But then it came back into popularity during the Great Depression. We started seeing more fears being projected. So then we started having the horror movies. You can include King Kong in that and so forth. So again, I think it's a response to bad perceived bad times.
Yeah, and the Cold War, too. That's where you get a whole lot of different monsters kind of coming in.
Invasion
all
of the
monsters
body
that were influenced or affected by radiation of some type.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Oh, okay. Yes. The Blob, the Thing.
Them about the giant ants in the New Mexico deserts, one of my favorite sci-fi horror movies.
Invasion of the Body Snatchers were being taken over by, communism.
Yeah, and by the time we get to zombies, we get consumerism in there. We're more worried about that and that it's basically overwhelming us and that we have lost our agency. We have no choice. We must keep buying things.
Gary, what's your favorite of the horror series, either movies or TV shows?
The most recent one that I like. A couple months ago, I really liked Twin Peaks: The Return, although that is the most bizarre. It's more bizarre than the original. The Walking Dead, the first couple of years, are absolutely fascinating. Penny Dreadful, as I said, very lavish set, so it's very beautiful. But not only that, there are these marvelous scenes in there where we have female characters that show their real power. One marvelous scene in particular I remember is one of the head witches is manipulating this guy in his mansion, and his expensive dogs, guard dogs outside are barking, and she just goes over to the window and kind of calmly raises her hand, and all the dogs stop barking and they just lie down very, very placidly.
That's okay. That's very creepy. and is there some element too, Gary, that people just enjoy being creeped out every now and then?
Mm-hmm. It's a working out of their own anxieties and fears. And of course, monsters inhabit this unreal world, and they're an omen of bad things, disruptions in the social economic order. And of course, the real soothing thing is that ultimately, in almost every horror film, for instance, the monster is defeated. So there's a reestablishment of conventional order. And I would say that's the concern these days, reestablishment of conventional social order.
We will continue our conversation, horror movies and superheroes, and you can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney, and joining us to discuss the popularity of horror and heroes in the media are University of Cincinnati McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professors Dr. Rebecca Sutherland-Bora and Gary Vaughn. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And let's shift it to superhero movies. In fact, we've got a clip from the new Thor movie that's coming up.
Whoever she is, destroyed your hammer like a piece of glass.
Kneel before your queen.
You don't stand a chance.
I'm putting together a team.
It's me, you, Valkyrie, and the big guy.
No team, only Hulk.
What's the matter with you? You're embarrassing me. I told them we were friends.
Oh, this is going to be fun.
Thor Ragnarok, am I saying that right, Rebecca?
Exactly.
Okay, <Yes. laughs> so that's coming out soon. In fact, I think it's already been released overseas, hasn't it?
Yeah, they've done one of their slow rollouts like they did for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and Spider-Man Homecoming. So we get to wait.
Okay. But it's already making some money already, and it's just going to continue. I think it was $12 billion from Iron Man through the most recent Spider-Man that Marvel has made from all its movies. And that's pretty astounding that superhero movies are that popular.
Yeah, they're doing something right. They've been announcing for years that this trend was going to be over, but really it's still going. And Marvel is willing to take a risk on a lot of independent actors and directors. And so that's what they've done with Ragnarok. Taika Waititi Probably best known for What We Do in the Shadows and Boy and Hunt for the Wilder People. Just, you know, this really, if you know him, you probably like him. But it's definitely this understated sort of humor that's a little wacky, a little bit out there. And it's just, by all reports, has made such a good fit with this really kind of restarting the Thor franchise, which had been kind of the sleeper one out of all the original Avengers to get a franchise. So don't go in thinking it's going to be like The Dark World or the first Thor, very, you know, dramatic and Shakespearean. It's definitely going to be more of this new cosmic sort of look, closer to Guardians of the Galaxy or even Doctor Strange in some ways. If you like Jack Kirby and you like the cosmic Marvel comic books, this is going to be it. It's kind of a buddy movie between Hulk and Banner and Thor. You've probably seen a lot of them on the ads because the ad campaign has just been rolling out more and more.
Yeah, it's been all over the place. Yeah.
But it's, I would say it's going to easily make over $100 million here domestically. And it's neck and neck, I believe, with Spider-Man as far as what it's made outside the United States.
What was the reasoning? Why was there that thought that superhero movies had reached their peak and that they were going to start declining?
A lot of people just don't get them. They'll associate them with the comic books and kind of pulpy stuff, kids stuff, and not realize that this is, you know, first Thor, actually, with Bran, I kind of had it right. This is sort of the Shakespeare and the sagas. And for, you know, our time, you know, this last century, it's really, you know, it's hard to believe it's been around that long, but as a medium. But it really does cover a lot of the mythology and other things and reworks it into different ways. And Gary was talking about the social anxieties. You can kind of see that working through a lot of times in comic books and some of the subjects. We just had Civil War about a year and a half ago, where everything got torn apart and Steve and Tony are fighting, and will we ever get them back together in time to save everyone from
Thanos?
Right, it
was Iron Man versus Captain America. And
yeah.
Yeah, and then they all took sides and exactly.
Yeah. Not my favorite way to do an Avengers-type movie, but I like it when they're together, and we're going to have to do that because Thanos is on the way.
By the way, Taika Waititi is short for The End of the World as We Know It, which is essentially what Ragnarok means in Norse legend.
Okay. Interesting. Right. Are there any statistics, Rebecca, about the ages of people who are watching the superhero movies? Are they attracting a certain age group? I mean, a lot of these are heavy on special effects. Guardians of the Galaxy had a lot of sarcastic jokes in it. It seems like it's geared toward maybe teens or 20-somethings.
They're meant to have fairly broad appeal. What they're doing better now is it's just not the male demographic like you'd think of for comic books. It tends to be people who are older who started reading.
Okay.
But also they are somewhat courting the female audience more and more. And when we have Black Panther come out on February 16th of next year, we'll finally get to see some real diversity because basically we have, what, two Tolkien white guys in that movie because you have Andy Serkis and as one of the characters who's actually the villain in there. And then also, here's my senior moment I'm blanking on. The guy that played The Hobbit. so bad. Anyway, my students will get me for that. But two white guys in the whole thing. The rest of it, it's set in Wakanda.
And then Black Panther, that character came out of the Civil. I saw him first in the Civil War movie.
Yes, yeah. That was his first appearance.
Yeah, and explain a little bit more about him.
Okay, he is a prince, and since he lost his father, he has inherited the title of King of Wakanda.
He's prince of an African nation.
Yeah, and it's a fictional nation, but what's different about it is that it's not a third world country. They are actually on par with the U.S. and better, in fact, in tech and social programs and things. We got to see just a teaser of it at the end of Civil War. That's where Bucky was kept and Steve was there at the very, very end. But it's, you know, this is definitely going to be a movie that we'll finally get to see, you know, what Wakanda is like. And It's, oh my gosh, the representation of African Americans in this, director, the people who did the design, everything. And Angela Bassett is in it. Trying to think. I would have so liked to have had her as Storm years ago, but that didn't work out. But in here, she's T'Challa's mother, which is really neat.
How do you think women are doing in superhero movies, Rebecca?
We're doing better. Wonder Woman over the summer, I'm probably in the minority. A lot of my friends are just, that is, you know, the best thing ever, you know, ever since sliced bread. But I think it was pretty good, and it's something that we really needed. It's a DC, and I mainly work with Marvel. But I think it's what's going to help us get more movies where we actually have a woman out front a lot more. We're going to have Brie Larson as, Captain Marvel coming out before too long. It's on the slate. We'll have Evangeline Lilly, playing, the Wasp in Ant-Man and Wasp will be next summer. So we're getting there. We still don't have a Black Widow movie, which of course makes me very
Scarlett
sad.
Johansson's character.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who has been in all these films. And, apparently, I've been told, makes a little cameo in Ragnarok, which, you know, is somebody that I'm a big Bruce and Natasha shipper, so I'm really excited about that part. we have a female villain in Kate Blanchett in Ragnarok. I'm really eager to see how this works. She's definitely been good in the clips, and so we'll. And I'm not going to do spoilers like some people have done exactly what relation Hela is to the rest of the characters in there. But it looks like it's going to be pretty exciting to see her, you know, get up there and be some evil temptress and kick some butt.
how many women are writers and producers of superhero films?
Oh my gosh, you have got a few folks in there. The first Guardians of the Galaxy, one of the scripts had a female writer on it initially. We're getting more, but it's very slow, partly because they plan these things out so far ahead of time is part of the issue with that. But we've got, a Captain Marvel movie, I believe, has a female director in that, and I'm not sure about the writers on the script. But it's supposed to take place in the 1990s, and we'll see kind of what vibe it has. We're just sort of getting some of the first ideas out there and have been shown a few of the costumes and things. But apparently we're going to get the Skrulls involved with that. And it's supposed to be really come in right before Avengers 4, which is the one after Infinity War, which will be in, 2019, May of 2019. So.
And they just keep on going.
Oh, yes. That's why we're so eager to finally get to see Black Widow on the schedule. It's coming, and Feige says it's going to happen.
So. About time. She's one of my favorites. So I'll be glad to see that. Nathan joins us now. Hi, Nathan.
Hey, how you doing today?
Good, thank you.
I just wanted to throw out, you're talking about all the film side, but Netflix has this great, addition to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Jessica Jones is a fantastic character, and I just don't want to see her left out of the conversation, so I just thought maybe get some input on that too.
Thanks, Nathan. We appreciate the call.
Yay, Netflix. Yes.
Yeah, and so explain this Netflix series, because as I understand it, it's basically it's ordinary people. They have they have extraordinary powers, but they still are facing a lot of the same day-to-day issues.
It's set in Hell's Kitchen, and which is a part of New York. We started off with Daredevil and then went to Jessica Jones, and then got Luke Cage, and then Iron Fist. Then we got the Defenders, and second season of Daredevil is in there too. We're supposed to be getting back in this next one. Nelson Fisk is supposed to, the Kingpin, is supposed to reappear. Jessica Jones, though, oh my gosh. Now, it's not for kids. It's really, these are the grittier ones that this is definitely for adults. The themes are definitely for adults. And so don't put your kids onto Netflix to watch that by themselves. But it really goes into some of the darker corners of, psychology. And It's really well written, really well acted, and you will see bits and pieces of the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but not worked in quite as intricately as I'd like to see. It looks like since they got rid of the creative committee, we will get to see maybe some interaction. And let me mention also Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which we've only got a few weeks till that comes out, the new season of it, which we have always had strong female characters on there.
How's that done?
It has done steadily, fairly well. It's not burning up the charts, but it is very respectable. They have managed to keep it going. Inhumans has had a rougher time, which what they did is kind of broke things up. So we had Inhumans in the fall. It didn't do very well when they tried putting the first two episodes out in the theaters and the IMAX, unfortunately. But you have to put a lot of money into somebody who's got hair, that's supposed to be interactive. And, you know, for Medusa, everybody loved Lockjaw, which is the huge, he looks like a bulldog, but he's actually an inhuman that, you know, transports and teleports people. So people love it. It's actually caught on with kids, which I think is pretty neat. And if they would really try and work this and keep with it and give it a good budget, it would probably make it. But the unfortunate part is, you know, I don't know if we'll ever get to see a lot of interaction between the television shows, the Netflix, and the movies, just because we've got different people controlling different parts of it.
Rebecca and Gary, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
University of Cincinnati McMicken College of Arts and Sciences Associate Professors Dr. Rebecca Sutherland-Bora and Gary Vaughn. Coming up, we'll take a detailed look at the City of Cincinnati's incentives program. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.